Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday. It is the 22nd of August. You're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests. 952 78 4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official if you wish to be involved with the show. We'll be discussing the latest situation with Brexit. We'll be looking at the government's decision to increase prosecution of hate crimes. We're going to be looking at the latest news coming out of the States, and also about the situation with Big Ben, which we may leave until the last. We're here until for the next 2 hours. And joining me in the studio today, former ABC correspondent and regular panellist, Nathan Thomas. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Giles.
Rex Leyland.
Good morning, Giles. Lovely to be back.
Leaping in, as always. Nice to see you here as well. And also in the studio today is John Harper. Morning, John.
Morning, Giles.
If you want to get involved with the show, as I said before, 952 78 4000, the phone number, studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email. If we're going to start, though, with the story that broke whilst I was on air last Thursday, the tragic bombings in Barcelona. Yesterday, the driver of the van that ran rampage along Las Ramblas was killed by security forces. Was found after a manhunt in Spain. It begs the question: what does the attack mean for Spain long term, for Barcelona long term, and is it going to make a huge difference to the tourist industry in Spain as it did in Tunisia and Egypt? And what does that do with the situation as it sees these young men were radicalized in Spain as well? Nathan, your thoughts first.
Well, one thing it does point out that there are people like that here, as much as there are probably anywhere, and this group, and it obviously in this case is a group, whether it stops at 12 or whether that cell, as they're calling it, was larger than that, or whether there are other cells that are connected or unconnected, it's one more example of this is all over, and it can pop up anywhere in the world at any given time. So, you know, that is kind of just an example of fact that is there, that everybody kind of suspects it. And here's evidence that, yes, even here, that does happen. What is going to do long term, and yes, the event was horrible and so on, but you know, what it's going to do long term is a question. Whether the reaction of, and we're talking mostly tourists, you know, to Spain will change as it did to places like Egypt and Tunisia and some other places, it may not. People say, okay, well, I won't go to Tunisia, but you're not going to stop me from going to Spain. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. It's something we're just going to have to wait and see. People do want vacations. They're going to have to go somewhere. And I think what it's going to get to in the minds of most people is not, oh, that place is dangerous. It's which place is probably the least dangerous, as opposed to, you know, no danger at all, because as we're learning, there is no place that this is guaranteed not to happen.
Rex, your thoughts on the attacks on Thursday?
Well, first, I think massive congratulations are due to the Spanish authorities, all their various agencies, albeit a very, very sad event, repeating itself now throughout the world. But I think the Spanish police deserve all praise in very speedy expedition of catching and dealing with the problem.
It's the Mossos. It's a little thing here. It's the Catalan police who are independent who actually did the shooting. So that's. Well, we'll come on to that in a minute.
I didn't know about that.
The Mossos de Esquadra, yeah, but that's the Catalan police who were behind the shooting. But anyway, please.
But they've done their job.
Yeah,
for sure. Absolutely. And they deserve their credit.
Yes, but they don't think they're Spanish.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks for the correction. What I think is also disturbing, I read the other day that ISIS and their horrible disciples are planning the next atrocity in their minds is to derail trains. They have found a device that is easily constructed. It has no trail, so no one can see what you're buying. It's something that can be made at very, very simply, put on the tracks and derail the trains. They've suggested doing this because, of course, the trains can't be... you can't guard millions and millions of miles of railway track in America or in Europe or anywhere else. So that is something I think we all need to consider. The only thing that really upsets me is the radicalization and the mentality of the people who carry out the atrocities, how they can possibly get up in the morning, do what they do without thinking about it. I just can't believe that they're actually human beings.
John, your thoughts on this?
Oh, I don't think it's going to affect our tourist industry because, sad to say, 13 people, terrible, 45 million of us over here. It's a very rare incident. More people than that die on the roads every day, and we're not banning cars. So I don't think it's going to affect the tourism industry. As far as what Reich said, because these people learnt derailing trains from Lawrence of Arabia, so I guess we could have a little bit going on there. And it would be horrible if they started doing that sort of thing. But the fact is, you have a group of people we have allowed into our society who have diametrically opposed opinions to what Western society is. That is a problem. Nobody ever wanted to do the name of it radical Islamic terrorism. Let's say it, let's call it what it is. They do not respect our society. They want to subject our society, and they want it to actually... They're quite happy to kill all of us. So how do they get up in the morning? Because for some peculiar reason, they think that dying, killing people is going to give their God to make them into a martyr. When in fact, the definition of a martyr is somebody who dies to protect their own faith, i.e. saving their own faith. So if they were dying because somebody was telling them to renounce Allah, they might be a martyr or whatever their God is. But the fact is, you're not a martyr when you go out there and kill people. You're a terrorist. You're a murderer. I could say other words, but I won't on the radio.
Nathan.
Yeah, again, it's where your mindset is, and their mindset is in a different place than ours. I think the one thing that we're starting to see is a difference in terrorism. Forget who is doing it and what their ideology is or anything else. It's just the fact of terrorism. Because I think not too long ago, terrorism as we know it recently, I think both the terrorists and the people trying to prevent terrorist acts all had it in their mind that terrorist acts were going to be a big, significant, spectacular thing, that you had to bring down an airliner, you had to blow up an entire building or something, or why bother? And I think they have begun to realize on both sides, whether it's the terrorists of whatever ilk or the people trying to prevent it, that they get as much coverage, not just media, but talked about, they are gaining their goal as well by taking an easy thing like a car, a truck, derailing a train, which again is, you can do it without months and months of planning and all of this, but doing something very simple, very fast. You may only kill 12 people, but again, this has been headline news around the world now for a week, which is basically what they're after. It has terrorized people. It is going to make people question the way we do things. We're now, oh, we're building bollards all over the place, which is the goal of terrorism, in this case, to disrupt Western civilization as we know it. And they are doing that.
Just to let you know, we're up to 15 victims of the attacks in Catalonia, because there was a victim in and also the body that was found in the car, that Abu Yaqub stole. He stabbed the driver of the getaway vehicle. John, you wanted to come on this one?
Yeah, the basic fact is what these guys, maybe they're trying to radicalise us, but they're just as they're being radicalised towards their Islamic terrorism, the public are being radicalised against what they're doing. And I can see a big upswing of people, you know. I mean, the Brits in particular, but Europeans in general, we're pretty laid back. But when you actually start getting to a point where the ordinary man on the street realises that these guys want to kill us, they don't want to completely subject us, they want to kill us, you're going to see a backlash. And that backlash is going to go against the millions of ordinary Muslims that aren't actually involved in this. So, we have to stop them, and the only way it's going to stop them is if the West and the Muslims that live in the West do something I don't know what they should do, but something very radical to let these guys know it's not going to happen.
There are already reports in the Spanish press yesterday of graffiti attacks in both Seville and a mosque in Granada. So there will be a backlash, Nathan.
Unfortunately, the problem is nobody knows what to do about it. And, that's the dilemma. And the problem, I think, that is growing is when you have these big, complicated attacks, the chance of some security service finding out about it and stopping it, we know that happens. The more complicated it is, the more people who are involved, the longer it takes from the day you plan it till you carry it out, the more chance you have of being caught. But we're dealing more and more, I think, with these types of attacks that can be thought up and carried out in a matter of hours by one or two people, and stopping those is practically impossible.
Rex?
I was wondering whether the listeners and, of course, the panel are of the opinion that the IRA seem to have melted away with their form of terrorism. In the past years, I lived through the bombings in London and stuff like that, and I mean it was very frightening. But how does ISIS and their followers compare? How do people think it compares in the type of terrorism to what the IRA were using?
Well, I'll come back on that one, Rex, because with the IRA, I mean, the reason, one of the things that we may be thankful for was the fact that this attack in Barcelona seems to have happened because, A, it was relatively low-key. And I know when you're dealing with 15 people dead, but they had to go and hire vans after a couple of things happened. One is they couldn't hire a truck because none of them had an HGV license. They wanted a big lorry. And two, over the explosion in Wednesday, which killed the suspected imam who had so apparently radicalized these young men, and they had 100, I think it was over 120 gas canisters found, and they were trying to make their own bombs. Now, I don't remember many of the provos blowing each other up in their own bomb things, in their own bomb factories, but it also says that they were looking at doing a spectacular attack, and obviously they're saying that it could have been the Sagrada Familia tourist, the cathedral in Barcelona, international symbol of Barcelona, would have been a devastating effect. And do you now then, if you go somewhere, should you keep away from tourist areas? I mean, that would be the next thing. And as I said before, or do we, as the saying goes, keep calm and carry on, panel?
I lived in central London through the IRA thing. In fact, one of my tenants got blown up, the journalist guy. Can't remember his name now even, but he got an award and he got a trust thing. He got blown up because it's typical journo fashion. He's supposed to actually make the news, watch the news, record it, not actually do it. He went up to the second copper that was opening a boot and said, "What's happening here?" Well, what's happening here is the copper opened the boot and both of them got killed. So I walked around, I was in London, central London, all the IRA time. It never bothered me. The IRA, by comparison to Islamic terrorism, is like saying a corner shop to Walmart's. I mean, they were very small number. And the IRA didn't want to kill every Brit. They didn't want to kill every Northern Irishman.
And they just wanted suicide. They didn't want to die.
They wanted their country in the way that they thought of it. And whatever the rights and wrongs of that, they had a political reason for doing it. They didn't actually have the reason being that we're going to kill or subject every single one of you. And if until we can actually get round to that, there's no argument with that. There's no discussion. I don't want to be a Muslim.
The other thing is, of course, that they are the radicalised are banging on about this forming this caliphate. And I read something the other day that if we can stop them believing in forming or the formation of a new caliphate, then perhaps we could go towards arresting their rotten, stinking ideas and their so-called martyrdom. But I concede that the word is used incorrectly.
I mean, to say that you can actually change their ideas founded in 600 or something, that's when the whole concept came together. And since then, the whole policy is that Islam must rule the world. putting it seriously, if you believe that your God is the only God that should be permitted, then everybody else that doesn't believe that, in your eyes, is an apostate, and therefore is either going to be converted or killed. It's as simple as that. And thank God that they're the only ones that actually think that sort of way. I mean, you don't get the Buddhists doing that. You don't get the Christians doing that.
Well, you used to get the Christians doing that.
Absolutely.
And they have grown out of that, if you will.
And by 22nd century, we might well find that that Islam is a peaceful religion that it says it is. But right at this moment, it's not.
Nope. but like you say, changing ideas. I mean, nobody has wiped out the philosophy, the whatever, of Nazism, of, you know, white supremacy, of all of these things. You can't wipe out a thought, an idea, or whatever. I mean, I don't know how you do that. I don't think anybody knows how to do it. It isn't done. And I mean, something will, you know, become popular during a time, and I'm talking over long periods of time, but it used to be Nazism. It used to be, you know, the Red Brigades. They're all of those terrorist organizations who wanted something, and it comes. There's
always been some group somewhere who are aggravated.
Of course there are, and there always will be, and you never really can get rid of those ideas that people have.
Fermenting.
Yeah, I mean, they're there. It's how do you control it?
Of course, the other problem we have, certainly in the UK, I don't know about other countries, is that the majority of radicalization now goes on in prisons throughout the country. And that is something the authorities are realizing and are starting to address. But when you put somebody inside, you don't expect them to come out worse than when they went in, what's happening.
But this is something that's always been said about jails. I mean, you take somebody who has committed a crime, you know, perhaps, I don't know, say innocently, the one time somebody did something wrong, they got caught, they throw them in jail with a bunch of criminals, you say they're going to come out, they're learning to be a criminal. So to say this is a new concept that nobody's thought of before, everybody knows that you put a whole bunch of criminals together, and then you put in people who are not really criminals, but the penalty they have to pay for doing what they did is to go live with these criminals for a while. Of course, you're going to, you know, they're going to learn a lot of things, whether they change or not. But it's no different with, you know, radical Islam. If somebody is put in with people who believe that, and I think what will start happening more and more is segregation within prisons.
Well, because there's one exception to that, and I can't remember the name of it now, but there's a prison in South America where they handed it over, the actual management of it, to a bunch of Christians, and they evangelized, and that has the lowest lowest rate in the whole thing. They all come out sweet and light. They all stop doing crime. What you put in is what you're going to get out.
Yeah. Yes, and prisons have never really been a re-education center. I mean, this is what you talk about in the old Soviet world, with China, with a lot of countries where we're sending you to a re-education camp. It's not a prison. It's just we are going to re-educate you. And it does happen. It does, whether it works or not, some do it better than others, and it depends what you're re-educating them to. But that is not what most Western prisons try to do. I mean, yes, they'll try to help you teach you a trade, do this and that, but they don't, as the goal of the prison, try to reset your mind. I mean, that is not something that, you know, is done.
Rex, you want to come in?
Again, just moving slightly away, but dealing with extremism, we always talk now about Muslim extremists, but of course there are extremes in every religion which we tend to overlook, mainly because they're not going around killing people, but all religious extremism is unpleasant. You can go to each religion, Judaism, Catholicism, Anglicanism, and everybody has their higher groupings of total extremism. The only difference is that, for example, Opus Dei in the Catholic Church, although they're extreme, they're not going around killing people.
Allegedly.
The Lubavitch and the, whoever they are, the Hasidim in the Jewish religion, don't go around killing people, but they are still unpleasant with their thoughts and their directions and how they deal with it. Opus Dei, very, very strict indeed. But the difference is the Muslim kills people. The rest don't.
It's, do you see this extremist group or that one as a threat? And most of them that you're talking about, no, you may not like what they're doing, but they're not a threat to you, your civilization, your way of life, whatever. At this point, the big bad one is Islamic extremism, and you know that's the focus of everyone at this point. But sure, I mean, pick any subject, any area, you've got people who are extremely, you know, locked into that and want to convert you. I mean, whether it's an economic theory or anything else.
Washed.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what it is. And the question is what we were talking about earlier. I mean, re-educating people, the other word for that is brainwashing. And, you know, do we as a Western society want to take these people that we have jailed who are radical Muslims and have been jailed for committing one crime or another? Are we trying or should we be trying to, quote, re-educate or brainwash them?
John.
Okay, well, a couple of things. First off, I've been in a few Anglican churches, Rex, and I can tell you there are people there who would definitely know how to make bombs and kill people because they've all done it before in their prior life. But the thought of trying to get a bevy of Anglicans together to go and do a terrorist act is just amazing because you can't, generally speaking, get them go out the door and talk about Jesus, let alone actually do a terrorist act. You're talking about a country club. So I don't think we need to worry about rampaging Anglicans. Mm. It's not going to be a big problem. The second fact is, why are we all making apologies for this? Like, well, trying to compare radical Islam to Buddhism or Christianity or anything else on this. They are totally different from everything else because they are the only religion that says my way or the highway. That is it. They are the only people that do that. So I don't think we should be making apologies for them. On the third and final point, prison. If you look at it in scriptural terms, there are only three solutions for somebody that commits a thing. The first one is that they pay restitution. If they can't pay restitution, then the way it's said is to be sold into slavery, which is a kind of a version of prison. But you're actually sold to slavery until your debt is paid off. And the third way is if you've done something which can't be answered by the first two, you'll get killed. So our prisons in themselves shouldn't even be there.
And we've got some callers on the line. 952-78-4000 is the phone number if you wish to get involved. Go to the lines. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Paul.
Good morning, Paul.
These sectors in Afghanistan, Iraq and all them, they've been killing each other for thousands of years. They're continuing to do it. They can't live together. Now, we had our tribal wars 600 or 700 years ago, and we grew out of it. They still have not grown out of it. The only way that they were controlled for a number of years was people like Saddam Hussein that controlled them. And in Libya, Gaddafi controlled that lot. You know, I mean, they will continue to kill each other. They cannot live together.
Rex is nodding his head.
You are quite right. The proof of that is the existence of the State of Israel. As long as the Arabs keep fighting each other, the State of Israel will continue to exist. When the Arabs all learn to live together and go in as one, Israel will not exist. So you are absolutely right. The Arabs have never learnt to live peaceably amongst themselves. Look what's happening in Qatar right now. I mean, how they're bickering. It's just a classic example of tribal warfare.
And we've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, good morning, Sharon Alicante.
Morning.
I've got to ask why now? When the Moors ruled in Spain, the Moors, the Jews and the Christians lived happily side by side for several decades, if not a couple of hundred years, until the Moors were ousted by, was it Isabella?
Isabella and Ferdinand, 1492.
That's right. And then a few hundred years of monarchies and then so on. Why now? And I think Paul's point about us unseating some of these leaders that kept them under, such as Saddam Hussein and the Libyan leader, Gaddafi, wasn't it Farage who said, and I don't like Farage, you know that, but wasn't it Farage who said, we've got problems once you've unseated, was it Gaddafi he was talking about? And it's true, we've unseated these leaders, just as the Brits redrew the map in India and Pakistan after partitioned them after independence and caused a great big mess. So we've caused this, in part, to blame for this mess. I'm not excusing them. I think they should be rounded up and stuck in separate cells. If, I mean, it's not possible. We need the infrastructure for that. And I think I'm glad they've been shot dead. But I just think that we have, in part, some responsibility for this. I read in the Telegraph on Sunday. Yes, I do write. I too buy right-wing papers sometimes.
Right.
I think you should read everything. But they were saying, you know, that we can't use this as an excuse because Spain has never had much part in, didn't have much part in the Iraq War. But what that journalist forgets is that they were a big part of. They want Al-Andalus back, and he clearly hadn't thought about that. But why now? I think we have something to do with it. But can I just praise the paramedic who really went out of his way? His name was Hussein something or other, I can't remember. He clearly was perhaps a Muslim, I don't know, I can't remember. In the Finnish attacks, he stayed back and helped to try to save lives despite being permanently disabled now himself. I just hope the benefits system in the UK gives him the benefits that he needs. That's my point. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much. Yeah, there was a knife attack. Thank you very much, Sharon. There was a knife attack in Finland by a lone Moroccan 18-year-old as well, which two women died in. John, you wanted to come in?
Well, I mean, the guys that occupied here for 600 years, they were Almohades dynasty, and they were a much more tranquil lot. They actually did give the offer, if you want to fight us, we'll kill you. If you want to surrender, we'll accept you. You can either become liege, i.e. you pay us a penalty, or you join us. So they actually did, they worked out that was a very much better way of actually doing it than actually having to fight for every city you took. Because most cities turn around and say, okay. And Spain in particular, for 600 years, you've got to remember, there's an awful lot of people here walking around with the name of Perez and Garcia and Moreno, who are actually Jewish, but have probably been Catholic since they were made to convert back in the 1492, when we kicked the Muslims out and put the Catholics in. So, I mean, you know, it's a mixed box, and people right the way through. I'm half Danish, half Irish. I consider myself English. For 600 years, the Danes occupied England. I don't have any desire in my heart, though, to go back and reclaim Norwich, because we lost it, you know. I mean, that's where my family came from. I don't have any desire to go up there and say, I'm claiming this back. But every Moor that left this place, I used to live up in Galthine, and there were no keys to the door. I mean, that's a joke. But I mean, that every Moor that left this place when it's 1492 took the keys of the house with them. Now, that's kind of a symbolic, prophetic act, isn't it? You're like, oh, I'm going to come back. So they do want to come back. And if it was the Almohades dynasty, which were actually quite docile and quite pleasant, and actually added a lot, I mean, let's face it, Granada was built by them. It's an amazing, amazing structure. It was so good that when the Ferdinand and whatever it is got down
Isabella.
Got down to Granada, they were kind of astounded and made it their home for the next 15 years because it had facilities that nowhere else in Spain had. So, I mean, we can't play it down. That particular period of Islamic growth was actually relatively benevolent for the countries it took over. But we're not dealing with them now. We're dealing with Wahhabis. And they have a completely different viewpoint. That has to be dealt with. I mean, it is a completely radical sect.
I just have this vision now of a longboat full of blonde John Harpers landing on the beach somewhere near Norwich and saying, we're taking it back. Rex!
I think Sharon is quite right when she mentioned the fact that we took the lid off the cauldron, i.e. Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi. I think we could blame Blair and Bush for that. Now, in hindsight, we can look back and say we should have left them all, those awful dictators, left them in charge, minded our own business, kept our lives out of theirs, and probably we would not be in the situation that we're in today. Probably.
Isn't hindsight wonderful?
It is wonderful, but I'm afraid in this case it's bang on.
But none of those things were done, rightly or wrongly, having anything to do with the Muslim religion.
Right.
I mean, whether you believed in weapons of mass destruction or not, that was the reason. It had nothing to do with, they're keeping radical Muslims under control, so we'll leave them there. And you balance, well, there's this reason to do or not do something, and there's this other reason to do or not do something. And you make the decision. The decision was made. At this point, it doesn't matter. Blaming Bush or Blair or whatever. The other thing I want to say, which Rex was talking about earlier, was tribal warfare between different Muslim countries. Well, what was World War I or World War II? Factions. Well, what's the difference? I mean, they were all Christians.
True.
Right then.
Just because somebody, and Westerners look at it this way, we think just because somebody is a Muslim, they're all the same thing, and that runs every Muslim's life, and it's not true.
With the pushing and the shoving of Iran and Saudi Arabia. Because they're both different factions. Do you agree with... I mean, they're
factions,
using other countries as puppets.
They are different countries. They have different thoughts about a whole lot of things beside religion. The same as Christians do. Just because you're Christian doesn't make you all great, great friends. We have proven that over decades and hundreds of years.
On that point, on the email, studio@talkradioeurope.com from Nassim Ahmad, saying, question for your panelists. In the World Wars 1 and 2, were the Muslims killing other Muslims? In Vietnam War, were the Muslims killing other Muslims? All mankind is the same. Muslims don't have a monopoly over killing each other. We'll take a short break and then back with more Viewpoints.
TRE. Talk Radio Europe. Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme. We discuss the issues of the day with a panel of invited guests. Joining me in the studio today, Rex Leyland, John Harper and Nathan Thomas. We've been speaking about the Barcelona Barcelona terror attacks took place last Thursday. The four remaining surviving members of the terror cell are appearing this morning in the courts in Madrid after yesterday Yunus Abu Yagub was killed by the Mossos, the Catalan police forces. He was cornered in an olive grove, I believe, found wearing a fake suicide vest and shouting, Allah is great, God is great, before him being shot by the police there. We're asking about the repercussions on the Spanish tourism and also the repercussions for Muslims and other faiths living peacefully in Spain. Any thoughts on that before we move on to our next topic panel about where we go with this, Nathan?
Well, simply... Most Muslims, most people of other religions, other ethnic backgrounds coming from other countries, most places, most people live fairly peacefully together, and it's not a problem. I mean, it is, as Rex was saying, it is extremists of any ilk that cause the problems. Unfortunately, no one has really ever come up with a real good solution as to what you do with extremists, whether, you know, a lot of them aren't necessarily violent, but the most extreme of the extremists turn to violence, and no one has really come up with a successful way of dealing with them.
Rex, is it going to put you off going to somewhere like Barcelona? Now they seem to be targeting the tourist sites.
I would never be intimidated by any atrocity. I think keep calm and carry on is the exact expression we should be using. I should also stress that I think we should be ever vigilant as good citizens of any country, wherever you are, be ever vigilant. What we've experienced in London recently and Manchester has been absolutely appalling. I think Spain has been reasonably lucky until now, and I hope this is it, that there's no more, obviously, because Spain relies on tourism and it generates a lot of money, and also a lot of people depend on tourism. And we hope for all our sakes, that Spain remains as safe as it always has been, and that we will all continue to come here and enjoy the delights and the hospitality of the Spanish people.
The other side of that is a lot of tourists depend on Spain to be there. Yeah. Because, like I said, people are not going to stop going on vacation. And they will look now for the safest place they can find, and this may be it.
Yeah, there's no question that Tunisia and Egypt and Turkey have been wiped out for the time being, as far as tourism is concerned. And Spain has benefited enormously from that, and long may it continue to do so. But obviously we want peace and tranquility everywhere, not just in Spain, but everywhere.
And John, I mean, 5 days after the terrorist attacks, the last terrorist is shot dead, showing that the Spanish police, you know, got a handle on this very quickly.
I think the Catalan police, whoever police, I think the police here did something which is far better than we would have done in the UK, because in the UK they probably wouldn't have been shot dead, they probably would have been put into prison, they probably would have been on trial, it would have cost a fortune. And if that's a very positive thing for budding terrorists, you know, we're going to shoot you. And that's a very positive statement. You know, you do something wrong in Spain, you will get shot. And they've done that with anybody. They would have done it with the guy that drove the car into the road if he'd have got out and been aggressive. Thank God we've got that situation.
I thought it was quite interesting that the attack in Finland, the policeman aimed for the leg, which was quite compassionate.
We're going to the phones again. We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Felix. Just 2 points, two quick points. The issue of Andalusia, Al-Andalus, and the issue of Barcelona. First of all, the Islamic conquest of Spain was run on normal Muslim lines, which was defeat the enemy by great force and cruelty, and impose Sharia law. Sharia law, I remind you, was run on the basis that if you were people of the book, that is Christians or Jews, then you paid a yearly tax under humiliating circumstances, and other laws enacted against you, and you did not step out of line. If you were not people of the book, you were killed. Spain was a horror, a place of horror. Don't believe the lies that have been spread about by Karen Armstrong or by Sharon.
Right, okay, so you're saying that the Andalus, the flowering of the Hanan Khalifa. Okay, go on.
Just to move on, can I move on to Barcelona, please?
You can move on to Barcelona.
Very quickly. Barcelona happened because great numbers of immigrants, especially Muslim immigrants, were invited in by the Catalonians and by the Spanish, and have created a huge problem there. And it's only a matter of time until there are areas which are run by Sharia. And some months ago, Ada Colau, the Lord Mayor of Barcelona, member of Podemos, led a march through Barcelona of some tens of thousands, which ended up at the Mediterranean on the beach. And they opened their arms and said, please come to us, all you immigrants. Well, those immigrants have come, and they have killed many Spanish people, broken up many Spanish homes. And I noticed Ada Colau weeping crocodile tears just a few days ago.
Thank you for your call in there, Felix. Absolutely, thank you for your call in. Always like to hear a viewpoint. A place of horror, a place that found in Granada, Cordoba, Seville, the temples of astronomy, medicine, irrigation and literature. Spain, a place of horror under the Andalus.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
You're listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. 952-78-4000. We go straight to the phones. Thank you for holding. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Mr. Brown. Raymond from York.
Good morning, Raymond.
Right, I'm going to say something which I think needs to be said. My first reaction when I hear these things, it's always the same. My first reaction is, oh, get them out. And then I calmed down a bit and I realised that's exactly what ISIS and Al-Qaeda want. They want us to rise up and commit acts of violence against Muslims. This is not coming from me. This is an American intelligence expert who worked for years in the Middle East, and he was on BBC Radio World Service, and he talked about this. He said that's what they want. They want to get its people so infuriated. Now, remember this. Good and bad in everyone. We have loyal Muslims serving in the British Army in MI5, MI6. They are police officers, nurses, doctors. They practice their religion and they don't hurt other people. And we have to accept the fact they live in our countries. They have a different culture, a different way of life. All right, we don't integrate very well. But then, I'll just give an example. Where I live in Mallorca, we've got Irish pubs, Scottish pubs and English pubs. They don't go into each other's pubs either. They speak the same language. So this integration, it's like parallel societies, and we have to accept that. What can we do? Right, a sensible country, when you arrest people for terrorist activities, you do not send them to prison. You repatriate them or deport them to their country where they came from and let that country deal with them, yeah? So then they don't have the chance to radicalise others. It's just pure common sense. But I'm afraid in our country, the UK, our government doesn't have much common sense because they don't know what they're doing. And as someone already said, a prison is a university for crime. People go in there. In the UK, it's pretty bad. I suppose it's bad in the States as well. But the people who go into prison, who have their first drug experience in prison, heroin and stuff like that, so they become drug addicts. They learn other methods of crime. So it's only natural when you're in a prison, you've got young Muslims all together. It's there and they need to sort of form a gang, if you like. And this radical attitude is their identification. It's how they recognise each other, like the Aryan Brotherhood in America. The Nazis, they do the same. So we must not overreact. We must not hate all of them. I've known some in my life and they're decent people. It's a big mistake. But having said this, I don't want the Islamic culture to take over my culture. I'm against the Islamification of Europe, but I do believe in some form of sort of peaceful coexistence. Right, thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much, Romeo. I'm going to go straight to the phones again. 1 second, I've been calling for a long time. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, it's Janet from Mallorca.
Good morning, Janet.
Another Mallorcan. I agree with Brian, I must admit. We shouldn't be living in a cage, basically. We should have our freedom. But I must say one thing. I give a big bravo, such well done to the Spanish police and the Secret Service. They have been absolutely brilliant. And, of course, there's not been anything in Spain to do with terrorism since 2004, except in Mallorca in 2009 we had two Guardia Civil that were shot. But because of all the work they had to do with ETA, the Spanish Secret Service is fantastic. It's really on top of everything. And if it's happened here, then it would happen anywhere. Anywhere at all. Because they are brilliant at what they do. They have been really quick with the DNA. They've been really quick getting these people and knowing who they are. And of course, their hands are tied to a certain extent. Until they catch them doing something, there's nothing really you can do. I just wanted to say that. I just think the Spanish police and Secret Service are brilliant.
Janet, you're calling from Mallorca, you know, a busy tourist area. I mean, yeah. It could have quite easily been somebody having an attack on the cathedral in Palma, for example.
Exactly. There's all sorts of places in the cathedral, down in the Paseo Marítimo, or even in, like, the restaurant district. It could have been, because it's a pedestrian street, but there's no bollards there. They could have just driven through. And there's just tables and chairs outside all in the street. So that could have been a massacre. But the thing is, why should we live in a cage? I'm saying they're now blaming Ada Colau for not putting bollards up. But you think, goodness me, why? Why do we have to do this?
Mm.
It is restricting our freedom.
Indeed. Janet, thanks for the call. Nathan,
I know and that's exactly what, you know, the goal of the terrorists is to restrict your freedom, to change our way of life by disrupting it one way or another. The bollards are the latest thing. I mean, in for the past however many years. Look what they've done to air travel simply for the same thing. I mean, realistically, how many people have ever been found to have explosives in their shoe? But because one person has been found with explosives in his shoe, how many millions of people have had to stand in line at the airport and take their shoes off?
Rex and John just put their hands up at the same time, which is quite disconcerting, gentlemen.
But again, it is the question of, all right, it is terrible that 12 people, and I'm using the 12 because those are the ones that were killed by the run over by the van, that 12 people were killed that way. But as we talked about before, there were thousands of, whether they were tourists or people just living in Barcelona, who spent that day perfectly fine. Do we change our way of life by putting bollards up and disrupt to probably not a whole lot because one incident killed 12 people? London Bridge, or it's not London Bridge, it's the Westminster Bridge, is the same way now. And yes, they put bollards up, which isn't that wonderful. Now for 100 yards or whatever it is, a car can't run into the people there. Go on either side of the bridge, it's, you can't put bollards everywhere. And do you change your way of life and how you do things because of one incident that, if you look at statistics, is really fairly insignificant?
We go to the phones. Good morning, caller. Thanks for holding. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Paul.
Yes, Paul.
This thing about that we shouldn't change our way of life. They're trying to make us change our way of life. Look at the mayor of Manchester, a Muslim. And before a council meeting, they have to say a Muslim prayer. I mean, it's a Christian country. If you go to a country, I came to Spain. They never built Christian churches here for me. You know, you either adapt to where you're living and live with the Spanish people and get on with the Spanish people, but you don't try to change a country. And that is what's happening in England. And that is what people are standing up against. And you can have all the mealy-mouthed people in the bloody world ringing in and say, you've got to be nice, you've got to kiss ass, and you've got to do that. You have got to say, enough is enough.
Indeed, thank you for that comment there. I think we'll take that one in the podcast. We get live to the lines as well. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Sharon Alicante again. Just to say, and also everything Janet said, absolutely spot on. And during an interview last night on the news at 10, the interviewer was trying to dig at why the police hadn't observed that this cell was happening and that these people were being radicalised. And there was a kind of implication from the UK that the police should have spotted this. And I thought, oh, here we go. We know better than you. Jingoistic Britain again. So, Janet, yeah, I agree with you totally. The other point is, I'd just like to... I wish Felix would listen properly, because if he'd listened properly, he would know that I wasn't making up rumour and lies. I was merely relaying what I've learned over the years from various textbooks and interviews. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We're going to go to the email studio@talkradioeurope.com. Nassim says, these terrorist so-and-sos are not bothered about living or dying. In fact, because of being brainwashed, they are probably actually want to die during their operations. Catching them live to find out more about their networks, the British way, where possible, is always a better option. That's from Nassim. Also got an email in saying a good start from Craig. A good start would be stop calling this extremist terrorism or radical Islamic terrorism. A recent poll showed that 30% of all Muslims in the UK would not tell the police of suspicious people within their midst. This is a PC problem, started almost 20 years ago, and now we are reaping the rewards of a failed multiculturalism experiment. That's from, and also the West Recent Wars, another email, may have been Christians against Christians. They were not because of religious differences. They were colonial political aspirations. The words that on that panel. We're going to move away from this topic in the second hour. Your thoughts, your final thoughts on where we stand after Barcelona.
Just a quick one. It's a question of verbology again. Integration or assimilation? What do people think? What is the difference between assimilation and integration?
I think assimilation, obviously what you should go for, because that's actually people who are blending in and like, et cetera, et cetera. Now, one thing I wanted to say, and I missed it earlier, there was a guy I saw the other day. He had 20 years experience in the Middle East in this sort of situation, so I guess he knew what he was talking about. And he said that the way to actually stop this, and this was agreed by people he'd spoken to in the terrorist side, was to actually, when somebody did something like this, that their whole family got taken and put back to wherever they came from. He said, because the one thing they do understand, they don't understand Western society, but they do understand tribalism and they do understand family. And if you just, if they know that if they go and kill people, their entire family is going to be put back to Syria or Libya or wherever they came from, they will be very wary about doing it. That's my final word on that.
That's not the first time that's been said.
No, and people talk about, one of the callers earlier talked about, you know, when somebody commits a crime, send them back to wherever they came from and let them deal with them. Well, that's a very easy thing to say, but you can't just do that because very often the country that they came from is your country, first of all, because they were born there. Secondly, the other country doesn't want them back, and there's no way, unless you're just going to throw them out of an airplane with a parachute, you can't just send them back.
Sounds good.
We'll be back with the second hour of an always lively viewpoint. International and national news up next.